Although TEPCO maintains that no contaminated water has escaped the premises, ocean and groundwater leaks are estimated to take at least 5 years to decontaminate, according to a December government report.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, the U.S. sent a warning yesterday to the Afghan government against releasing detainees who the U.S. claims are dangerous militants. The warning came after the Afghan government authorized the release of 37 prisoners. The prisoners set for release are among the 650 held at Bagram Prison, north of Kabul. A spokesperson for Karzai, Hamid Karzai, said that the U.S. attempt to block the release was a clear breach of Afghan sovereignty. In addition to the disagreement over the prisoners, Afghan President Hamid Karzai's refusal to sign a security peace agreement has led to worsening ties between the United States and Afghan governments.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, January 28, 2014. Israeli soldiers detained the Palestinian Prime Minister for 1 hour and kidnapped 30 civilians during drone invasions targeting West Bank communities. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. On Tuesday, Israel occupied West Bank, including occupied Jerusalem, and kidnapped at least 30 Palestinians. The army has alleged that the kidnapped Palestinians are wanted interrogation centers, Israeli sources reported. According to Palestinian sources, invasions and kidnappings were reported in the cities of Jenin and Tulkarem, northern West Bank, Ramallah City, central West Bank, and occupied East Jerusalem and nearby towns. Most of those kidnapped were taken for escalation in army kidnappings targeting Palestinian civilians. Various Palestinian communities in different parts of the occupied West Bank violently searched homes after invading them and kidnapped 70. Elsewhere, Israeli forces on Tuesday erected an iron gate at the main entrance of Bethlehem village of Nahalin. Local sources said that in 2001, Israeli forces blocked a road connecting the village with Hebron. On Tuesday, they removed the earth mounds, blocking the road, and replaced them with iron gate, which expected to give villagers access to Route 60, a main highway for Israeli settlers running the length of the West Bank. In other news, Israeli soldiers manning a checkpoint at the northern entrance of Ramallah stopped on Tuesday the convoy of Prime Minister Ramil Hamadallah for a security check and kept him there for 1 hour, according to government statement. According to the Palestinian government statement, this is the fourth time the Israeli army has stopped Hamadallah's convoy this month. The Palestinian government denounced the act and the demand by the soldiers to inspect the identity cards of Hamadallah guards. The government said that this action is part of provocative steps by the Israelis, which target Palestinian citizens as well as the Prime Minister convoy. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, January 28, 2014, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imeemc.org. Report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Badnoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories here at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kelly Sunrose, Terry Eaton, Jeremy Kaplan, Don Merrill, Sam Smith. Our producer and engineer is Sequoia Wright. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. Or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282 91.9 FM. I'm Nat Parker.
And I'm Kristen Yount. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Lisa Loving hosts Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. At 9, on Political Perspectives, I will be speaking with Howard Bloom, the philosopher at the end of the universe, about the political climate surrounding the 2014 Olympics in Sochi, Russia. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on the radio zine, Roberta Hall hosts a feature on the success of OSU Divest in obtaining Oregon State University Faculty Senate approval of a resolution asking the OSU Foundation to divest of fossil fuel stocks and the student government's role in the movement. Thanks to KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a member yet, you can do so by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Good night, Kristen.
Good night, Nat.
The workers on the SB line for strikes are out of call. But Casey Jones, the engineer, he wouldn't strike at all. His boiler, it was leaking, and the driver's on the bum. And the engines and the bear, and they were all out.
Our first association was on the Lonesome Train, was that right?
And a program called This Is War 2. You had a big program on
the Fine Networks.
And Woody Guthrie and Lee Hay, calling ourselves the Almanac Singers, came on and sang our own new words to a little old square dance tune.
I wish you'd give us a little, a few corners of that square dance.
Wished I had a bushel, wished I had a peck, wished I had old Hitler with a rope around his neck. Round and round Hitler's grave, round and round we go. Round and round Hitler's grave, won't get up no more. And so on.
Yeah, well, you know, that created quite a sensation. The program itself, the one you're referring to, well, now, that was used on a Note of Triumph. When I wrote On a Note of Triumph, which
when
was...
When the war was over.
Right. It commemorated victory in Europe. And CBS asked me to knock off what I was then doing. I was doing a series of broadcasts, weekly broadcasts, and they said, it looks as though victory in Europe is imminent. Will you prepare a program for the end of the war, for the night of that victory? And I proceeded to do that. And I remembered this song that you had sung in This Is War, in the This Is War program. And so I wrote it into the script. And I alternated it, used it as a punctuational effect in a rather high-pitched script. It had a marvelous reaction around the country. Pete, I remember asking you way back then, which is almost a generation ago, how you happened to pick the banjo.
I don't know. I often wonder why. What makes a person like one instrument more than another? Why does one fellow pick the clarinet and another the trumpet?
You know what deep psychological reason you gave me then?
What?
You said that you looked around you at the field of instrumentation and found that the banjo was very
small. Oh, well, there's other seldom used instruments too. I think it's a happy sound, and I'm optimistic in the world, in spite of all the logical reasons for pessimism. As long as you want to live, you got to... Well, you remember the Peanuts cartoon? Linus, in the first frame, says, when a little baby is born, he's cold, he's scared. Second frame, he needs something to cheer him up. Third frame, I think every baby should be born with a banjo.
That's beautiful. Yes, it is a happy instrument. Tell me, Pete, have you found that the instrument has increased in popularity?
The banjo will never be as popular as the guitar, at least not in this period of history. There's too many reasons for somber reflection. And I myself now play the 12-string guitar, the instrument that Leadbelly used to play, just almost as much as the banjo, sometimes even more.
Why do so relatively few people play it?
I don't know. Of course, it's a loud instrument, and the reasons for loudness are it got superseded by other much louder instruments. If you want to be loud, now you can be 10 times, 100 times loud with the help of electricity. But 50 years ago, the banjo was a good way to annoy your neighbors. And now they're much more efficient ways.
Yes, I know, but that's all the more reason why it should be coming back into popularity.
Well, I say relatively few. I wrote a little book on the banjo. First, it was mimeographed. It sold 100 copies in the first 4 years. Re-mimeographed, it sold all of 600 copies in the next 4 years. I printed it by photo offset with the help of my wife and son doing the paste-up, and it sold all of 2,000 or 3,000 copies in the next 4 years. Well, this goes a geometric progression, and it's now sold.
Wow.
Oh, it gets around. Not only in this country. Oh, dear. It's been translated into Japanese. And I think it's going to be translated into a couple of European languages, too. I'm not sure if I'm happy about this. Although I love the banjo, I know they have beautiful music in these other corners of the world, too, and I'd hate for the banjo to obliterate these forms the way the English sparrow has chased out the other birds in American parks.
Yes, but surely the literature of music and the musical interests are so wide and so diversified that there has to be room for the banjo. I know that there are in the classical repertoire concertos for balalaika. I understand that Earl Robinson wrote a concerto for the banjo for you.
Yeah, but I wasn't able to do it. It was beyond my capacity. And a young fellow I gave his first lesson on the banjo, Eric Weisberg, and is now a very accomplished musician, and he's a Juilliard graduate, can read notes and all that much better than I can. He actually did the job with the Boston Pops Orchestra.
Yes, I heard the tape. There is some talk of Andre Previn playing it in his new orchestra, for his new orchestra. Mrs. Seeger, who is here with us, the effect that there are 50,000 banjo players in the country.
No, hundreds of thousands, hundreds, if you added them all up. But this is still nothing to the guitar. You know, something like a half a million or a million guitars gets... it's the most universal worldwide instrument. Now, it's an extraordinary thing if you think of the history of this instrument. Started off in Asia thousands of years ago. The gypsies brought it to Europe around the 12th century. And in a couple of countries of Europe, it really settled in deep, such as Spain. And the Spaniards took it to Mexico. And when America decided, along with instrument then. And then the black people of the American South got hold of it. And here the most exciting new development came, because they started playing it in a basically African way. Gee, if I could get my guitar out, I could show you what I mean.
While Pete is getting his guitar out, I must say that Pete has not been affected by the years. He's still tall, rangy, good-looking, Lincoln-esque.
Balding?
Well, no, he says balding, but only at the temples. Now, what is that, a classical guitar, Pete?
This is a guitar with double strings, known as a 12-string guitar.
In the family of guitars, what is it called?
Just 12-string guitar. Or they call it an acoustic guitar, which means it's not electrified, unless I put a microphone in front of it the way we have now.
When did it come along in the development of the guitar?
I think the Mexicans deserve credit for developing this particular type of 12-string guitar. It used to be popular there. And Leadbelly, Hughie Leadbelly, who put together the song Goodnight Irene, Rock Island Line, and so on, the African-American people did was take this Asiatic, Spanish, Mexican instrument and play it in a new way. Instead of just going bass chord and then sing a nice melody, you've got a good rhythm going with their thumb. And then, just like the little drums in a West African drum ensemble, they got the syncopated beats with the top strings. Playing is now spread not only throughout the light-skinned people of the USA, but throughout the whole world. You find guitar players in Europe and Japan and Africa all playing this basic style. Although, when I say Africa, my guess is that they didn't need to learn from Americans to get this basic style of playing. There's some beautiful African guitar records available where they do the same thing. Steady note, steady rhythm in the bass, and then lots of syncopated notes with the top string.
Well, that is a basic characteristic of African music, yeah. Is it not?
Right.
I listened recently to some records that were by Hugh Tracy in Africa among the tribes, yeah. And I was astonished freshly by the variety and the sophistication of their stringed instruments.
Of all countries in the world that our family visited, and we didn't get to everyone naturally, but we got to an awful lot in Asia and Africa and Europe, we decided that the music of Africa and India too was just head and shoulders above the rest of the world. They have a spirit of improvisation which saves them from the dead end of formalism, which has afflicted the arts in so many places, where everything gets written down neat and must be done in the exact way. But the basic idea of music in both India and Africa is that you have an agreed upon, it may be a very simple melody, it may be a very simple rhythmic outline, but then within this framework, you improvise. And a person who doesn't improvise, they say, oh, he's not a musician. And I realized that this is what musicians could probably teach the politicians of the world. We have to plan. Okay, you have to plan in the world, but let's plan for improvisation. Let's not try and plan everything. You just plan so far the way room here, but he doesn't plan exactly what's going into the room. He leaves that for the dweller in the house to improvise.
Carries much further the principle of the cadenza in classical music. In a concerto, the composer, Beethoven, Mozart, would turn over to the instrumentalist, the soloist, the option of creating a cadenza based on the themes. But it was encapsulated within the framework of the highly rigid and formalized concerto.
Of course, European classical music did not formally... Monteverdi, the 17th century opera composer, would write the general outline for some of his singers, whether they would be high or low, what the harmony, the bass notes that the orchestra was going to play, but he'd leave the exact notes to the singer, the singer is supposed to sing, literally unwritten. And when asked about it, he said, I would not presume to write the notes for Madame so-and-so. She is a great artist.
Yes. Pete, has folk music always been an expression for and vehicle of ideas?
Yes. Positive.
How far back?
I'd say as long as people have sung, Singing has not been something, as they say, quote, mere entertainment. It's been something which makes people live better, relate themselves to each other, to their maker, to the world, to the past, to the present, to the future. And whether a song is a religious song, or a love song, or a lullaby, or a work song, I think the best songs have always been more than, as I say, mere entertainment. So I don't feel that I'm any great innovator when I go around singing songs that may very frankly get controversial about Vietnam, or atom bombs, or pollution. I'm hipped on that subject.
Yes,
these days.
It is the. I want to get to. I suppose by extension, the principle of controversy could be attached even to music as innocent in its context as a hymn, because religions are controversial, right?
Right. I've always said, a hymn is the most controversial kind of song. If you sing one in the wrong church, you'll find out.
Yes. When you consider how bitterly churches have been at war with each other in the past, bloodshed and burning and inquisitions and all, I guess the hymn is a highly controversial, highly charged folk song.
Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door shall be open. Ask and it shall be given. When the love come tumbling down. Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door shall be open. And it shall be given when the love comes tumbling down.
You are listening to the words and music of legendary activist folk singer Pete Seeger on Voices of Pacifica.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the 24th Annual Cascades Festival of African Films, which will be held from January 31st through March 1st at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus and the Hollywood Theater. The 24th season will open with Gree Gree, a drama set in Chad, following a young man who, despite suffering from partial paralysis, becomes a renowned dancer at the local nightclub. The film will show on January 31st at 6:30 and 9 at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. Over 20 films will be screened in this year's 24th annual Cascade African Film Festival, beginning on January 31st, running through March 1st. For more information, please go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Now is the time to act the fool tonight. Forget about your worries and you will be all right.
Oaks Park Roller Rink and KBOO Community Radio proudly present Bounce, Roll, Skate, Tuesday, January at Oaks Park Roller Rink. They'll be broadcasting a two-hour funk and disco special live from KBOO Community Radio at 90.7 FM in Portland, and you can be a part of it. It's a theme party, so feel free to wear your favorite 70s outfits, wigs, and costumes, or wear whatever you like. That's Bounce, Roll, Skate, January 28th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Oaks Park Roller Rink. Call 503-231-8032 or go to kboo.fm/themeltingpot for more information.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or Radio.
Welcome to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show on KBOO Portland. My name is Carla, and tonight we're going to be having a couple segments to our show, and we're going to be featuring some music from an artist who's going to be performing here in Portland tomorrow night. Now, before we get to our show this evening, I want to let you know how to connect with us online. You can email us at outloudradio@gmail.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Twitter if you network with those social media options. You can look for KBOO Out Loud on both Facebook and Twitter. And tonight we're going to be welcoming to the show Sharnay Mountain, who lives down in Medford, Oregon, and she's going to be sharing some information about some community events coming up for the gay and lesbian and transgender community in the Medford area. And then later in the show, we're going to be welcoming a couple of artists to the studio to be talking about their upcoming artwork. We're going to be speaking later in the show with Cayenne Pepper and Carla Rossi, and Gabe is also here in the studio with us, and they are part of an upcoming show here in Portland. So stay tuned to hear from them later in the show. Now, we're going to take a short music break, and we'll be back in just a few moments to speak with in community, playing here in Portland, January 29th, at the Secret Society, located at 116 Northeast Russell. The song, again, it's Chris Purica. The song is titled Porch Songs.
We sang porch songs like we were rock stars, and we drank